Welcome, and you're listening to a Queued Up Media Group production of Geekologist Radio, a division of the Ninja Pancake family of podcasts. And now,
shut up and sit down.
Hey, it's Derek, and welcome to Geekologist Radio, where we take you through our queue, into our gaming systems, and ride the hype train from the past and into the future. Let's introduce our crew for tonight's cast. First up, we have, after our long drive home, Chris.
I am Groot.
Oh god, not again.
I am Groot.
Damien, please, let us know how you're feeling in your non-Groot.
Nah, I'm good, man. I'm excited for the podcast. That was not a voice changer.
Yes. Voice just naturally changed to the high pitch. And then with the deep, sultry tones from Utah, we have Beef Out.
It's not seafood. It's hot dog, not hot dog.
Hot dog. Octopus.
Not hot dog. Octopus. Seafood.
Oculus?
Noah said nothing about VR? Oculus. No VR.
Oh, man, we're getting into, like, our shows already, right off the back. But right off the back, one thing we've been doing recently is going through some errors and omissions. And one error that we didn't do, but somebody else did, came up last week.
Oh, no. Yeah, there was a serious error by Mr. Gunn from Guardians of the Galaxy. He called it an oops. Where he had Stan Lee, and Stan Lee had talked about being the FedEx guy when he was talking to the Watchers. If he was talking about that, he was doing that post being already in Civil War, so it would have been before he was actually in the movie. So it's like one of the few errors that Gunn actually makes in film where he crosses up, because he, you know, crosses the T's, dots the I's on those type of things. He openly admitted it after a bunch of people called it out on Reddit. At that point, if it's Reddit, obviously you know these guys are diehards.
Yeah, because that's true, because Guardians 2 takes place about 2 years before Civil War in the MCU.
Yeah, it does. It's really minor, but, you know, he came out, had to have a conversation about it and say, you know, my fault, my bust. So, you know, errors and omissions sometimes aren't just us. There's some other big name and high profile people. And so we're going to call that out, too, if they openly admit the fact that they were wrong. Doesn't happen very often, but.
I think one thing we talked about last week was the gay Marvel Cinematic Universe character. And one person is totally convinced that it was Doctor Strange. And I think he's wrong. And I proved it.
I don't know if I'm proven yet. We still shall see. Like he might have had a relationship, but
he definitely had a relationship.
We'll see. We shall see if it is Doctor Strange or not. we shall see.
We're gonna table this. Till
remember
Civil
all
War.
Those times during Westworld when y'all were like Arnold and Man in Black and all that stuff, and I was stuck to my guns. But I had evidence then. Right now, I have no evidence. I just have my.
The other part is the at the very end of the movie, you see the watch that he purposely kept, even though he sold everything else to get to where he was. He sold everything just to get the plane ticket and to be able to move there. The one watch he kept was from her, and it was with her message said love and then her name. You don't keep a watch unless it's something special like that.
Could be friendship.
It's not friendship. You're stretching and you know it.
It's a friendship wrist bracelet.
It could be. All right, this episode needs to start moving into high gear.
Yeah, yes, we have so many topics to cover. It's been
all right,
absolute
overload. Let's get into our queue.
We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
Yeah, so we're jumping into our queue, and we're going to be talking about a show that I had no idea that was even flipping on TV, and it's won Emmys. So, and we're going to be talking about a show called Master of None. Master of None is produced, written, and acted in by Aziz Ansari. If you have seen Parks and Rec, which most people have seen, He's hysterical in that. He's also unbelievably funny in this movie, in this show. It's on Netflix, and it's one of those Netflix shows that runs about a half an hour. And from the moment that I watched it, I started just like tearing up. It has a lot of life situations. I mean, first episode, and I'm going to go give you basic scenarios, were about not having kids in your early 30s and then thinking it's very easy to do so. Another episode was about parents and not knowing what the hell to do when it comes to technology. And then eventually it leads, which kind of bummed me out a little bit, into relationship stuff, which I think everything falls into that trope. It's kind of a bummer that it went there. It's still funny. But I watched the whole first season. If I had to give it a grade, I would definitely say it was a solid 7 to 7.5. He plays a single guy in the city who is a character actor slash commercial actor trying to make it big. And it just goes about his day-to-day life and what life's like in the real world. The thing I really appreciated was it was very real, like it was down to earth. The one thing my wife, when watching it, didn't appreciate was the fact that he was using terms like on fleek. And she was like, who uses that in like real life? Who uses words like some of the language he was using was very hip. And it was like, yeah, no, people like him would not use that language. Like they wouldn't. They just, in general terms, they would not talk to a friend or a girl in the terms that he was saying it. But again, an exaggerated version of himself. I thought it was hysterical. I haven't seen season two, which is out. So I'm going to be watching that this week, and hopefully I'll have a response to season two. Fouts, I know you started watching, or you watched all of season one, correct?
Correct. I've watched all of season one. I would give the first half of season one an 8, the second half closer to a 5. It kind of just died down and lost some of its funny for me. I almost think it tried to get too serious. But yeah,
Chris, that's would you compare opinion. This to Crashing? The way you explained it sounded very similar to kind of the HBO show Crashing.
You know what it reminded me of, it more so than anything? It reminded me of, oh, damn, I'm trying to think of, HBO ran a show like a while back, like a long time ago. I'm talking like 10 or 15 years ago, and it was almost like a real-to-life comedy, which involved the actor. It's almost like how Tim Allen had his, you know, Home Improvement was like just an offshoot of who Tim Allen was, and it was just an exaggerated version of Tim Allen's stand-up routine. This really feels just like a stand-up, like an exaggerated version of Aziz's just personality in general. Because he's from India, it really tropes his family members being from India and how they speak and how there's prejudice against Indians, but not so much that it's not against other cultures. And so he uses a lot of that, and it felt like a very big comedy routine, like that's what it was. Right. So to Fouts' point, in the back half, it got really kind of long, a little bit long in the tooth. I still enjoyed it a lot. It just wasn't as funny as the first, you know, 4 to 5 episodes.
Yeah, and speaking of family, I don't know if you know, but the actor and actress who plays his mom and dad in the show or his mom and dad in real life.
His dad is hysterical.
Yeah,
his dude is funny.
But he couldn't act out of a barn. Like,
no,
the acting is terrible, but it's so
terrible,
bad,
but it's
funny.
So bad. It's like, he's like, what do you want to talk to me about? And then he just says, he's like, okay, dude. And then like he does stuff and it's so funny. Like, I told my wife that I love the dad. Like, I didn't know that those were his real life parents. I absolutely love the dad. I think he's awesome in that. So that's actually kind of cool to know.
Yeah. One thing specifically on the, I find consistent in the show is the acting I find to be really sketchy. Like, it's not good acting. I really don't believe their motivations most of the time. Their dialogue delivery is off a lot, but it's like what it fights through all of that being so real. People reacting to stuff in real ways, sometimes with exaggerated dialogue, using real pop culture stuff to make some points that, when said from the voice of somebody who wouldn't say it, makes it humorous. I like that it's no laugh tracks. You laugh yourself, just like many other great comedy shows we have now do. Remove the laugh tracks, make it funny, and people will enjoy it even more. But one thing, I'm 2 episodes into to season 2 right now, and I really would like him to get some focus. Because figure out what you're doing, Dev. Just figure it out, because right now he is so, I don't know what I'm doing, And I don't know how much longer I can take him not knowing what he's doing. I would like him to stick with something. And at the end of episode two, it seems like that we might be leading that way, but we'll see how the rest of season two goes.
This is definitely a Netflix show. This is not something that would have made it to ABC, NBC, any network television at all. Not only because of the language or because of the comedy, it's just because of that focus, people would have been lost on a network television immediately. It earns its stripes as far as a Netflix show, because you can kind of blast through a season like that. And I feel like there are certain things that are Netflix and certain things that are now network in my mind. Like, right. I see a show and I'm like, this would be perfect for. And so this is one of them. So yeah. I don't want to belabor the point. I know, Cajun, you want to get into Fargo.
Yep. And one more quick point, Master. And this show would also work on HBO, but probably the only other network it would work on.
Yep,
would
be for HBO. Sure.
So yeah. Fargo, I'm caught up right now. All of the stories are merging together. Police investigation of the wrong Stussy murders merging together with the Vargas extortion of Stussy Lots, with Ray's extortion of his brother. All of that's merging together, like we've seen in all the other Fargo series and Fargo movies, where all of this, these disparate things start moving together and everybody's screw-ups start affecting everything else. We were joking off mic earlier, but... about something else in another show, but the main villain in this one is a guy named Vargas, and he is an intimidating crime boss with bulimia, and that was a weird twist. I'm like, you went deep on that character because he has like these weird teeth, and like, okay, they're going with it that way. But in order to intimidate one of the workers at Stussy, he puts his D in the guy's world's best dad coffee mug and then makes him drink it. And I was like, whoa. And that freaked that guy out.
Just made me think of Big D.
Did he make him drink it while his D was in?
No. And you don't get to see it because it is an FX.
Because that would
show.
Make it a sippy cup.
Yeah. One side got the other. Oh man. Now, and to keep it quick, because we have so much to go with this, and not to give away too much on the spoiler side, but in polar opposition of, not polar opposition, but stark opposition to Master of None, I'll go with that instead of polar. The acting and dialogue in Fargo is consistently great, and this season is no different. This is the acting and dialogue in this season of Fargo is the best acting and dialogue I've seen in a TV show in 2017. I'll put any of the shows we've seen up against what I'm seeing this season in Fargo. Everybody is on point in this one. It is fantastic in that front. So still thoroughly enjoying it. And these are one of those shows I really wish would drop more of, because when it is serialized like this, I'm just antsy waiting for that next episode. And then we finally caught up. Mr. Fouts has been begging, borrowing, and stealing for us to get caught up. We finally caught up, sir, on this show.
Yes, Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. I mean, I started watching the show because of you, and then I kept telling you, hey, have you caught up? And you're like, no, I've been watching this. I've been watching that. I've been watching
I tagged you guys on like that. Saturday, and I'm like, listen, I'm all caught up now. I've got all four episodes, or three episodes at that point of like season.
Yeah.
Season
yep. four. But I am definitely all caught up. I think everybody is, thanks to a Magic Plex server somewhere in cyberspace.
Yep.
I'm the only one. I'm the only okay. one that's not. But
you're fired
because I've been on. I was watching another show. We'll talk about a little later.
Anyways, Silicon Valley episode four. We'll do a whole season recap real quick.
This show is constant flux. There's nothing consistent of anything in these series. It is constant nope. flux. If you think a company nope. is doing great and this is what's going to happen next, and it's happy to sad, then sad to happy, and they do not waste any time in between they're doing story development. You think Pied Piper's doing great and it's going to do good, and then boom, it's something different. And then Piper Chat's going to do something great, and it's down. And then Belson's doing great with Hooli, and then he's not, and then he is, and he's not, and then he's in the dumps, and everything's up and down with the cast. And even in the house, we get to see they're really highlighting Jin Yang a lot, just so they can yell at him.
Yeah. Thomas Middleditch is he's really in like a in peril right now because he's fighting two battles. He's fighting for his own older company, and now he's fighting for a newer company, and he's kind of torn in between. His moral compass is telling him, okay, fight for what I believe in, and I think that this is where the company should go. And the rest of his company is like, yeah, well, you know, F off. Nobody believes in us enough to spend money on our company anymore, so your name is, like, really bad in this business, and nobody wants to, like, give us any of the money down. What I thought was awesome is when he asked, who's the guy who has that really ridiculous car, and, like, I can't remember
the guy's name. Oh, yeah. I forget the guy's name too,
but he asks him for money. He's like, "You don't believe in this company anymore, so like, do something you believe in." He's like, "All right." So then he does, and so the only thing that I appreciated, because I really don't care for this season at all, is the fact that he like went after what he believed in. I thought that part was interesting.
Yeah,
listen, I'm not caught up in this at all, but the only thing I wanted to state was the fact that, hey, Chris, I'm glad you said the actor's name and not me.
Yeah, and I said it correctly, too. Yeah. You would have got – catch me like 45 minutes from now, a couple of more Grey Gooses in, and I might be saying it wrong, but right at this moment, on point.
Yeah.
But you saw it. Both of you have seen this season. I mean, it doesn't seem like the previous three seasons. Like, it's just not as funny, I don't know, to me.
I think it's leading up to it, but it's doing it very, very slowly.
Yeah, I think it's setting up to where we're going to now, because this is that the flux might start to level off in terms of the volatility of the acquisitions and falling apart and company starts and stops. I think we're going to see more growth into whatever this new company is
They're
building with the new internet they're designing. I think there's going to be more focus there. More focus there, and then it's also going to be dual focus with Dinesh and them working on the their thing with what was it?
Periscope.
They got a deal with Periscope for their hot dog, no hot dog out. Hot dog, no hot dog.
No hot dog. Hot dog. The hot dog, no hot dog thing. Wait. Was no funny. Oh,
with Periscope?
So funny.
Like Twitter Periscope.
He was like, so if it's not a hot dog, it won't know what it is. Yeah. But that app, it's like, if it's not a hot dog, and he's like, nope, it's either a hot dog or it's not a hot dog. That's it. That's all we know. we could fix that.
Oh, I get it. Oh my god.
Yeah. And there's that line that no hot dog, hot dog, no hot dog was the best. There was a line before it I thought was going to be the line of the show, is when Dinesh came back from his date and he goes, "I did sex on her."
I did sex on her.
I was like, oh my god, dude. Following, because of the fact of how many people I follow on that social media, and yeah, so now I know what you're.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, they're writing an app for they're rewriting their app for Periscope so that it can quickly identify if somebody's D is on the screen in Periscope. So now Dinesh is forced to look at a lot of D.
I think that.
And you said, did you say you can download that app now?
No, that one, it's actually the hot dog version.
No, there is an actual. Yeah, the hot dog version of the app is real. You can download it on iTunes, and it's put out by Silicon Valley HBO.
You're going to see a turn of Gavin's character here soon, though, because Gavin's with Richard's character right now, but I don't think he'll be with him for very long. I think he's just going to capture whatever he can from that company and then run off and then give it either try to make it his own or steal the tech.
Go back to Hulu.
Yeah, I disagree, but this is so much flux, you could easily be right, but I think this is his payback. This is his payback to the board of Hulu and everybody over there that they fired him in error, and I think that could end up being that way. But this show, I cannot predict anything. In an episode, I don't know when it starts, like, oh, it's going this way, and then it makes two big jumps, and it goes a completely different way.
Middle out. That's all I got to say.
Yes,
middle
out. Still the best joke ever on television. Better than hot dog, no hot dog.
So I put myself through torture yesterday, and after the season finale of Modern Family, which, by the way, was not good, it's been extended by two seasons. I watched – you know how they always try to throw these shows in when they know that there's a solid lead into it, which happened to be Modern Family? So they threw Downward Dog right after it. And this thing was a train wreck from, like, the get-go. When I watched the previews for it, having a speaking dog in a show have their point of view of what it's like to have while I was watching this show, it was a woman who was in the middle of relationships, but going back to a relationship, and then the dog's perspective of all of this, and it just was bad. Like, it was really bad. It reminded me of one of those shows. Remember back, I don't know if you guys remember, when they used to call up your house and say, hey, we're going to run a preview of a show. Can you and your family watch this and then give us your review of it? And you'd call, like, they'd call you on the phone. This happened back in where I'm from, back in Pennsylvania. And so
I've never
it was like a telemarketer, but they'd call you and they'd give you privy to watching like this episode, like two episodes of a show. And then they're like, would you watch this? Would you not watch this? Blah, blah, blah. And this seemed like one of those really generic, just opening shows. And I guess it got terrible reviews. My wife, 10 minutes in, was like, why are we watching this? And I stated for the podcast because I was already 10 minutes in. I'm like, well, I might as well finish this thing. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. It's literally a dog speaking about their point of view about their master. And it's a woman who's going through kind of like a midlife thing with different guys and figuring out her job role and all that other stuff. It was just really, really bad. And I can't even imagine this is going to make it past two or three episodes through ABC before it's going to get shit canned.
Damn.
So it's got a 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb.
Yeah,
right,
and
now.
I can't imagine the next episode is going to be better. The only reason it has the 6.8 is because people were watching it as a lead-in from another show, and this thing is going to be a Tuesday show, not a Thursday show, because ABC has really ramped up their Thursdays because NBC super ramped up their Thursdays. I had talked about it before. My brother works for NBC, and they do programming and all that other stuff. They have solidified Thursday as being that go-to day again for all TV shows. They moved This Is Us, which is their big blockbuster of last year, into that Thursday 9 to 10 slot. And so they have a couple of comedies leading into that, and then they have a drama. That's going to be a really big time frame. This show would get buried. I mean, absolutely buried. Nobody would watch this thing. Can I do an off branch for like 30 seconds on this? I'm not going to swear. I'm going to say F. Who the F gives a rat's ass? Sorry about the ass part. About Roseanne. Who cares? Are you shitting me? I get that Will and Grace is back because people care about Will and Grace. And we talked about this in our Discord. Fuller House totally set this up for like everybody else. It's like, oh, wow, people care about really old 90s shows. Nobody gives a shit about Roseanne. I don't even care. They're like, oh, they're bringing about the twins, the two sisters that like in the middle of a season, it was a completely different girl that was the older sister. I don't care about that either. I don't care. It's nice to see John Goodman have a job again. But other than that,
no, John Goodman's been working, dude.
Everyone
is back.
Killed off. But everyone is back. Killed off.
Everyone is back.
He was killed off. No, you can't have John Goodman.
And then
when
I watched the preview for Will and Grace, it was terrible. They ran that NBC ran their up thing, which showed like all of the shows for the entire season and what they were doing. I called my brother and told him this. It looked like crap. I'm like, this was the worst acting I've ever seen. It was like a musical version of Will and Grace for like 10 minutes on why people should come watch them be old. And I'm like, nobody wants – it'd be like telling Friends to come back and watch Friends again being old. Nobody wants to see old Friends. They don't want to see 40-year-old Friends. Our memories of these shows are much better. It's like playing – and I said this to Fouts. I think I said it to you privately. It's like playing and it's Mario 64 – and having really fun memories of the game, having really great graphics and awesome gameplay. Nostalgia-wise, it's a really great game. But if it compared today against a Switch version of whatever Mario Odyssey is going to be, it's not going to be the same game. It's the same thing as our feelings about these old shows. They were great in the time period, but I don't want a 2018 version of Saved by the Bell. You know what I mean?
You don't want Screech as a principal?
It's just bad. And they're retreading a lot of these old shows because it's just a cheap cash grab. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. Roseanne's a train wreck. I'm definitely going to see at least the first two or three episodes of this thing. She's 100. It's bad. It's just bad television. And the fact that they're going back to this well because Netflix was able to cash in a little bit on Fuller House is just terrible.
Yeah. And
sorry, that's my rant.
And it's going to be a political crap storm for him too, because when you cancel Tim Allen, who is hardcore right wing, and then give Roseanne a show, who's hardcore left wing, it is a political storm. They did it within a week of each other. And so that is just like a political storm for them. It's that is tone deaf producing right there. Oof, that's crazy.
Well, speaking of political storm and something that used politics in the making of it, I was trying to go through and watch something that wasn't a couple of the TV shows that I've been watching, and up came it. It's a new arrival on Netflix, but it was done in 2016. It's a movie called Viral from Dimension Films. It was in theaters and everything. What's crazy about it, though, is that it's a horror movie that is legitimately based on science. Like, they went after the bot fly. It's like kind of based it off of that, of the larva, taking over. And it's kind of like you watch it and you think by reading it, you're watching a zombie film, but it's not. They call it the worm flu, and it takes over people when it mutates as it's been taken over. And in it, though, everything they go by the bot fly larva and stuff like that, which is all scientific, which was really cool actually to see a horror movie be based on reality. But the other thing is have you guys seen on YouTube or any of those things when they show the video of that parasite that takes over spiders and other, like, the and if they shock it, it'll come out, looks like a worm, or it's taken over. Take it over like a mantis and things like that. It's really crazy. Well, that is the theory of this, is that it takes over the actions of the people and eventually turns them into kind of like a superhuman version of a zombie, because they can't see. It's just the virus that's a multicellular virus. So if you're not a fan of horror movies, but you kind of like if you liked some of the movies that were like a plague or anything that were about that type of stuff, this is kind of a modern day take on those things. And it's actually really interesting. Aside from, yes, it is based on as a horror movie coming from Dimension, but I actually was really surprised by it. And if you like scientific kind of things like that, I recommend it. If you like horror movies, I definitely recommend it. Not like a 9 out of 10 or anything, but it's definitely a 7 for entertainment value. And just the fact of how closely they followed biology with it. I was really impressed.
Nice. And rounding off in our queue, I'm going to do quick Better Call Saul stuff. We get our first sighting in 3 seasons of Saul Goodman. He's been Jimmy McGill ever since the show started. And we got our first sighting of Saul Goodman. And really, it turns out, because Jimmy McGill is a lawyer with ads on TV, he gets his license suspended, and so he has to do something else. So he puts on a disguise, kind of, and goes and does an ad on TV as Saul Goodman. And we saw previously, like in his past, he came up with that nickname as It's All Good, Man, and just used it like that. And so that's where it came from again. Here, he was reminded of it, and boom, it's in there. And now we're going to really get to see where that comes from. So he's going to develop this Saul Goodman character throughout until he gets his law license back, and then he'll have to decide if he's Saul or Jimmy, and then he's going to go with Jimmy. He's going to go with Saul, and I think the reason is because I think my Cajun theory on this is that I think his brother will commit suicide this season. And that's going to be, he doesn't want to associate with the McGill name at all because of that. But that's not my theory on that. And rounding out the end of NRQ, let's jump into Game On.
Are we going to do what we're going to cover next week?
We can. What movies are coming out? Let's see.
I will be seeing Alien.
Yeah, so we're not going to be talking about anything next week.
Well, Fargo and Better Call Saul again. We'll probably do more into season
Alien
2 of Master
or Alien.
Yeah, I should either be through it or Alien finish Coven. Like completely.
I will as well.
And then we can.
Will you be done with
Last Kingdom? Yeah, Last Kingdom, I'll be further along. I may or may not be done. Those are long episodes. I may or may not be done, but I'll be much further along on Last Kingdom, so we'll do that. I know we talked about that one last week, so. Yes. That's what we're going to be covering.
We will not be covering Aliens.
Copy. We will be covering Alien Covenant.
Damien will be covering Alien Covenant. really, Scott's been up and down, man. He makes some good ones, and he makes some bad ones. I don't know about this one.
This one's doing good.
It is. It's not doing as bad as I expected from the trailers. But one thing I did hear was that don't watch, which we already saw, don't watch the prologue before the movie because the prologue has a big spoiler in it.
I already knew the prologue because of reading the artwork. Gotcha. Okay.
I was told, because I was just listening to Fat Man on Batman, and the writer of Alien Covenant also did the co-writing for like four upcoming movies that are like really high on the list right now. I know that it's like apparently like when he wrote them, they weren't all written in the same exact year, but he's got like four or five movies that are all hitting within this year that are all high profile movies, which I think is pretty cool. I think the writer's Michael Green, but
yes, you're right. It's Michael Green's the writer.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. That when you're hitting like that, that means you're hot, and we'll have some more in the hype train of somebody hot in Hollywood who's picking up a hot property. So excited about going into that one. But before that, we'll actually get into Game On now.
So first off, Xbox was promising more first-party investments are on the way. A lot of the stuff with that, though, is they actually are picking up. They're picking up a lot of different studios. Studio Gobo, which is I think I said that correctly. They're behind a lot of the open-world games that were developed for Disney Infinity, and they are actually doing a new IP. And it's supposed to be a strong character-driven story. We know this also because of what they were doing when they're hiring for their program directors and all that stuff that are online. It states the mock-up of what the story is for the game. But they're also looking at revitalizing they're talking about new IPs and also revitalizing old ones. Rumors are with this is that Fable is possibly going to be coming back with two different iterations that are in development. One, an MMO style game. The other is a open world comparable to The Witcher, but set in the Fable universe. But they said that that one, the rumor also behind that is that it will take place before all the other Fable games. So it'll be about the original collection of heroes, which kind of sounds like, you know, you're talking about Guardians and all that stuff. From Destiny.
So I'm going to get into a lawsuit that ZeniMax has now filed against Samsung. If you were following the ZeniMax lawsuit against Oculus originally, they sued them for the violation of non-disclosure by Pamelecki for the tune of $500 million for basically taking a photocopy of what they had come up with for a VR headset, and then Oculus, you know, pretty much took that on and then created their own headset according to them. Well, there was another lawsuit against Samsung, and the reason why is because they allotted folks from Samsung, and specifically John Carmack, to come in and visit the facilities unattended. And unattended information was leaked out via the Oculus, and therefore it was then transferred into whatever Samsung's doing. So basically the lawsuit is carrying over all of the stuff that came from Oculus. It's one of those things where it's almost like, you know, if one person does it, then I can sue the next person because they, you know, I already have retribution from the first, and just keep moving forward and moving forward and moving forward. So Samsung's next on the list. The issue, though, is Samsung is a bit more of a heavyweight than Oculus is, and so they have a lot more lawyers, and they have a lot more ways to get to ZeniMax on this. We'll see how it goes. It's kind of unusual, and it's a very delicate and interesting situation. Because Samsung can bring more resources, it makes the legal fight a little bit different. But the precedent's already been established from the previous situation. So therefore, that's what they're leaning on. And they're leaning on the fact that, hey, we won against Oculus and we run on this premise. So therefore, we should be able to win on this one as well. Because there's no denying, and there's no denying even from Samsung, that they took that technology. They've used that technology. It might be because they reverse engineered it, but they've used that technology in what they're currently doing.
Now, when they won against the other company, was it software or hardware that they were suing?
They were suing them over the software, I believe.
And it was a physical person that had left ZeniMax that they had proved took software to the other company.
Now, Oculus has filed an appeal against that verdict. So it's still kind of up in the air. And then they brought a personal lawsuit against John Carmack for $22.5 million, aside from the $500 that they won. So, I mean, there's still a lot of suits that are going to be going on.
It sounds like they're just money hungry.
It sounds like they lost something and they want to collect as much as they can off of what they lost.
I mean, this is kind of like what happened with some of the studio that behind Ark, the guy who left that, the studio he left was going under. And so they decided to sue him because he left and he started creating Ark while working for them. Oh. They had to pay them, I think it was like 20 or 30 million is what they wound up having to pay the company that he left.
And I remember I posted something, I think it was last week or this week. It had all of the VR headsets that are on the market right now and their revenue for like 2016 and 2017 projections, and Oculus was the lowest in both 2016 and 2017 projections of all of them by a good margin on quite a few. So
see, but the difference is with Samsung is there's nothing to the headset. It's all the phone.
Exactly. It's just the peripherals to hold the phone. So the cost, the barrier to entry of units sold. And that's why Samsung was so high on their list. Samsung was almost four or five times more Oculus. It's because that your barrier to entry is...
Because it costs like $100.
You already have the phone. Now, moving on from that, finishing, finalizing, and everything done that I could possibly do in Witcher 3 has been done. I finally finished the last DLC, Blood and Wine. Now, I got a warning before I got to the one section of the end about losing side quests. And so I went, finished off all the important side quests I wanted to do, and oh, what a change happened. I got full-on war in the city I was going in. Basically, the bad guys I was hunting turned, got an army, full-on war against where I was at, and you were just right in the middle of it. It was great. It was real action-packed, running around the city, doing some quick missions. There wasn't any side quest time at all because all your NPCs, you go to the door and it was all boarded up. It was like, it got real in that town. And it was like almost like it was one long run into the finale. It had a few breaks where you could have, but I caught up on my side quests and so I jumped right into it. So the Blood and Wine one specifically had three alternate endings. My choices led to what's called the tragic ending. There's a good ending, bad ending, and a tragic ending. And I got the tragic ending. And because a couple of reasons. One, I was not about to show people pity. I wasn't going to show the queen's sister any pity for what she did and hired. And I was not about to show the big bad vampire pity either. So everybody gets the sword on that faux show. And so I ended up getting a tragic ending. Apparently, if you let them live and let these two bad people fall in love or whatever, you can get a good ending and everybody lives happily ever after. I wasn't having that. Like, you did wrong. I'm the Witcher. I'm here to correct those things. And I corrected them with swords to the face. And so that was fun. I enjoyed it. I'm going to miss that game a lot. And now it's time to move on to something else. What that is.
Finishing Breath of the Wild.
The Witcher might be coming back, though.
The finale. Cajun, you got to finish Breath of the Wild.
I did. I know. I beat Ganon and I did 100 tower, but I'm not doing 900 Koroks. That's finishing. That is literally completion of Breath of the Wild. I am not doing 900 Koroks. Okay, I'm over 200, which is freaking phenomenal. I think.
Do it. Just do it. Do it.
No. I got 120 shrines though. I'll completion is that for sure, but none of that Korok stuff. No.
So listen, another thing that Microsoft did that was actually kind of a big deal. Phil Spencer, he's a fan, and we're talking, you know, early nostalgia and stuff like that. Now something about now a game that instead of being an HD remaster, they took a game that was canceled. They took the code. They actually had to reverse engineer it, but because it was so ahead of its time, all they did was bring it up to 1080p and use all the same assets, everything. I'm talking about the game Phantom Dust.
Which is why it's free.
But this is how they did it with service stuff, is that it does have packs you can get for the multiplayer versus mode. And the thing is that they have a lot of competitive players that are jumping on this. No. What I found interesting about it is, like, you got your games that you go back to and you play. I didn't get a chance to play this on the original Xbox. And playing it now, it kind of reminds me, because, I mean, one, this is a JRPG. Anyway, it was kind of cool what they did, and that they released it for free to the public. They originally, when they first released it, everybody was looking for it. Nobody could figure out how to do it. It was only on the Microsoft store. We actually put out a video for it, giving instructions on how to do it with the link. It is now on the Xbox store. So if you're looking for Phantom Dust, you want a free game, it's a good 15-hour campaign. Very reminiscent of games like Phantasy Star Online before they did the online version of it and whatnot. And it's a very different, kind of a mixture of like a card game, kind of like Yu-Gi-Oh! Or something like that, mixed with actual live action moving around instead of turn-based combat. But it's pretty cool. It's free.
I'm the opposite of a Care Bear stare. I'm like a Care Bear dump. So this movie, this whole thing, this game is free because if they would have charged for it, nobody would have bought it. And so it makes them look really, really good because they gave away a game that was remastered and everybody has some feels for it. If they would even charge $10, I don't know how much the sales would have been. The fact that they gave it to people, I think, is a really smart PR move. But in all honesty, I don't know anybody who is or is going to play this game.
Yeah, Damien.
I know one person.
Before is.
Mr. Care Bear.
I have a good analogy for you.
And also, this is Phil Spencer's like favorite
which
game.
Which is Chris, why it probably is given away for free.
You are Justin Timberlake in Trolls.
Yep.
Before he starts singing.
There you go.
as a good analogy to what you just put on as the that when I thought you said anti-Care Bear, I was like, that's the anti-Care Bear, him right there.
I'm super hyped to just get to the hype train, because what we're going to be talking about next has everybody in the Twitterverse and in that are on my friends list hyped. So let's get into the hype train.
All right, so first up in the hype train, I know I am super excited, and I may have been watching it live during the middle of the day today, as I think there was at one point 450,000 people tuning into the live stream.
Warlock for life.
and that is the Destiny 2 reveal stream happened today. We got to see so much, but still we don't know anywhere near enough, in my opinion. What are your guys' thoughts on the reveal stream today?
Reveal stream. I know enough, it was, but not enough, which is perfect for a reveal stream.
Mm-hmm.
I got to see the fact that nothing changed, which I think we were all talking about. Like, is this going to be different? Are they going to revamp everything? And they didn't. It was still the same gameplay, still the same. You know what it reminded me of is how Halo is very Halo. And so no matter what they do to Halo, it's always always has the same gunplay, same feel, same first person. They didn't F with that, which I think is awesome, because anybody who was the special people that came to this event, when they got their hands on it and had the hands on, it was like, okay, I can hop into this game and know kind of what I'm doing already.
First off, what we want to say is that Halo has always been Halo feeling when it was done by Bungie.
Yeah.
343. Yes, it's a little different.
And that 343 Halo is a totally different beast. I like it, but it's not my Bungie.
And even the changes they did make, they made changes to how supers work, have like a little sub super and special weapon. It's even special weapons and heavy are different names now. Power.
We have kinetic damage weapons. You have elemental, and then you have power. Correct?
I think power is the secondary, and I forget what the heavy is.
So power represents the elemental.
I think so, but...
So kinetic power, and then...
If we were recording a podcast on this, we would have taken notes, but considering we're not recording a podcast, this is kidding. Yeah, it just happened today, so when y'all are hearing this, it's probably been 4 or 5 days, and tons of articles have been written with the details, but we only have a few hours on this. And right before we saw the show, some of us were watching the Nightfall videos were literally NDA released on YouTube minutes before we started recording. So we were trying to catch as much of that as we can. So this was really fresh for us.
So they're keeping the Warlock, the Titan, and the Hunter, and they're just adding subclasses, Dawnblade Sentinel and Arcstrider, which I think is really, really cool because the Dawnblade, if you look at the Warlock, that thing is just super badass. Like, when you can take a sword and then take it up a level from original Destiny to, like, almost, like, golden gun status for a sword, which, like, that guy was whipping them, and then, like, flame blades were, like, flying out, and then he's also, like, jumping what felt like years in the air.
Honestly, it felt almost more like hammers.
Right? And you got wings.
Yeah, it was, like,
and you
years
got wings
in the air. And then the Sentinel was kind of cool because the Titan has the, what looks like, Captain America's shield that they can either hold on to or fling, and then the Arcstrider has that like staff, almost like Donatello's bow, and like he can like Darth Maul. Maul and like
yeah
and, like,
he was totally
Sith
Darth
action.
Maul.
That was full Sith action.
So like all of that stuff was like really really cool. I thought
there's not a lot of change. Those aren't a big change to the supers because the bow staff one is very similar to Blade Dancer, and the other two, like Faust was saying, are similar to hammers, with the shield having a protective place of it, but it's still something you can throw out repeatedly to do damage. So there is not shifts to the super in terms of how it reacts to some of the ones we have now.
It's like a melee super.
Even with Sentinel, the shield one, and Hammers got that ability to do like that perma shoulder charge over and over and over again, and you can see him doing that with the shield. So I mean, even that is similar. Right. So even for the deep
the ground aspect, pound for the Titan is a little different now. It's like the two handed fist, like straight down to the ground, which like kind of does a shockwave. The one thing that I appreciated was early on when they showed the first snippet was the Cabal trying to take over the city. Or take over the tower, pardon me. And when the Titan put up the bubble shield, it's almost like a sense of like, oh, thank God, they're keeping some of the same stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so you feel good because it's like something you remember. Right away, it was like, okay, I know what that is. And it didn't feel like it was too far off from what we were accustomed to.
What was crazy about this is how much, like, they're bringing in from the lore and stuff into this, though, too, because... You know, before it was, oh, these warlocks are one thing, they're one class, they're this, and then you see each of the leaders of these groups using multiple abilities on the fly. So they're not. It's going to change some of the lore up that's been thought of in the past,
right? And even though we saw some of that stuff in the trailer that is there, and we know from gameplay that it will be later, we also know that we will lose all of those abilities. Like early on in the game, like
yes, sir.
At the end of the first mission or right around there, because we saw quite a few cinematic cuts and we know exactly what's happening now. There's this giant like spider thing. It's this big mech that's going to attach to the traveler and it's going to try to
leech.
Harvest its light. They said on the stage, I think, and that's going to make us lose our light. And that's when these new abilities come, I think, is when us going into the wild, we will find those abilities. And I think those will be our only supers for a while until we dismantle that thing and whatever mission it is to get our light back and then start getting these the other abilities back as well too. So I think that's going to be almost like a whole new game starting from scratch. And I like how that, you're saying, Damon, builds into the lore. It makes really strong story elements to make it feel like you're starting from scratch again instead of continuating from another game.
All right, so one of the biggest differences between Destiny 1 and Destiny 2 that we all noticed is right there in the bottom left where, you know, you have your grenade, you have your melee, and there's that third ability. So the third ability for the Warlock has two options. It's either going to be a healing buff, so your health will regen instantly, so it's like a just instant self-heal, or it's a damage buff. So you can get a damage boost, and everybody else can stand in that as far as
I was just going to say, seen. Everybody else gets it because they show it in the gameplay, and we're getting that ability.
So it's almost like a Weapons of Light type thing, but the Warlock has it. For the Titan, you're either going to get Armor of Light or Weapon of Light, but there will not be a bubble shield for it. That is going to be the third ability for the Titan. For Hunters, you're getting your third perk is Shade Step. So everybody's going to be shade-stepping everywhere.
Now, one thing is, with this, we know that the team, prior to this reveal, we knew that they've been taking a lot of people from other development companies. One of them, a company that Brandon and I are fond of, is NCSoft America, that's located up here in Washington. And when you're watching all this stuff, and you're watching these new abilities, and these abilities that are buffing everybody, and things like that, that create more core team gameplay mechanics of you have to think about your build before you go into a situation. These are all elements that are taken from Guild Wars 2 or very similar to Guild Wars 2. And that's where a lot of the creative team that's gone into the story of this, there's key players from Guild Wars 2 development team at NCSoft that are now Bungie employees. And a lot of them were also working on open world.
Yeah, and Destiny did set a lot of this precedence with a lot of abilities that help others in their previously too. So these just kind of help accentuate that a little more. But one thing about abilities and sharing with others is the big updates to the clans. How we're going to get banners. We're going to be customizable banners. I don't think we're going to be able to submit logos. It will be kind of similar to you draw your own with the sandbox they give you art tools. So we can't do the big uprising I don't think.
You'd be surprised. I spent a lot of time. If they give us a logo maker, I spent a lot of time in logo maker.
Oh yeah. We have graphic. There'll be a lot of versions. There'll be a lot of good use out there, for uprising. But man, really excited about that and how they combined LFG with the clans, to kind of help find people so people who are in LFG can cycle through clans and see which ones they like from quick write-ups and then join clan groups who are LFGing for an extra person. And I think that marriage right there of having that little bit of personality involved with it and kind of just that little write-up where you can accept, deny, swipe left, swipe right sort of scenario is really going to help match people up in right scenarios where there's going to be less vitriol that they even said on stage today in Destiny 2. They still want to avoid in Destiny. That's why it's not everything is full matchmaking yet.
So we get Destiny Grinder.
Well,
yeah, there's a lot of guys playing Destiny. I'll give it to you.
People who play Destiny regularly have not been asking for this, but the average player has really been asking for this, and that's matchmaking and raid, and that's exactly what they're going to be offering. They're going to be offering raid matchmaking. You can join up with clan who is like short one, and instead of LFGing or like fighting through a bunch of people in game, you can just be like, all right, we're going to add a noob or we're going to add this person. The other thing they offered too was, they added Sherping, so you can Sherp. So you can Sherp our guide, and you can be. I don't know how they're going to do this. I'm hoping it's on a rating system of some sort, so that it makes it easier for people to decide who to allow to be a Sherpa. Because if they allow anybody to be, it could get out of hand. But they added that in game too, so they're adding a lot of quality of life additions to this game. When I was watching the gameplay, it looked a little bit smoother. It obviously looked like an upgrade from one, but it didn't look like such a far stretch from vanilla or whatever the extensions of year one was. What it looked to me more like was a lot of quality of life things that were changing in this game. And it was the community saying, we need this, we need this, we need this, we need this. And they kept going, we can't do that yet, we can't do that yet, we can't do that yet. And then this version of it, it's like, here's everything that you've been asking for the last year and a half.
They're already going back on a lot of the stuff that they wanted to include in the original Destiny that they didn't. Because see, originally, the classes were all supposed to have specific weapons that they had perks with. The Titan was supposed to have an extended perk towards shotguns. The Warlocks were supposed to be SMG users, which the SMG completely got taken out until we see the reveal trailer and all that stuff. And the Hunter is holding an SMG. Destiny's going to finally get full, you know, we're going to have our assault rifles. We're going to have all the different, you know, the personal defense weapons. We're getting SMGs finally, and that's my go-to gun in almost any game style or gun type, so I'm really excited for that. I don't know if they're going to do the perks where each class gets a certain perk towards certain type of weapon use, but either way, SMGs are in the game.
That's to your point, they've also added a couple of things that were originally supposed to be in Destiny 1, including the European Dead Zone, which was originally part of Destiny 1. They pulled that because of the rewrites that were done, and now they've re-added it back in again. There's four new planets that are going to be added in: the Titan, the Io, the Nessus, and the Earth's European Dead Zone. So they're going to be adding those things to it. There's going to be a greater emphasis on exploration, so there's going to be actual towns and NPCs who you can speak to, which is leading this more into like more of an MMO or that sort open world. The areas that are shown on the maps for these worlds are twice the size of Destiny 1, which you'd expect because it's going to be going to a newer platform.
European Dead Zone. Dead Zone is twice the size of their biggest map today. That's what they said on that one.
So. Which
their biggest map? Their biggest map? Are they saying the biggest map? Because if you go to Earth right now, because of all the expansions, would technically be
the Cosmodrome. The Cosmodrome is the biggest map. Right now
we're not including this.
The Cosmodrome is their biggest map, and European Dead Zone is over double that size of the Cosmodrome. So
that's
big on itself. But one thing you're saying, I don't know if these maps are going to be add-ons or the only. I don't know if we'll still be able to go to the Cosmodrome and to the other places because they didn't say that.
Probably not. I would guess not. At all, especially the Cosmodrome, because of the tower getting wrecked and all that other crap. I think we're getting pushed out into the European Dead Zone, and that's where we're going to stay on Earth. We're also getting Lost Sectors, which is going to be explorable dungeons, which is huge.
That's fantastic, because when you're just out there, when you're first getting it with your friends, you're like, what's that? You're in a mission and you want to go over there? Where you get something out of it, instead of it just being like, oh, it's a wall and it'll open up later. It's actually something you can go into.
If you had
now with the explorable dungeon,
I was going to say, if you have another area to go to that's not a raid, and you're not prepared for a raid yet, but you're trying to get up to that level, and you're able to go to these explorable dungeons and hang out with a bunch of friends. The whole point of the raid is to be able to spend time with five or six buddies and just hang out, right? So if you can do that in an explorable dungeon and do the same exact thing, without having all the pressure of a raid, that might entice people to do that to start and then move to a raid. So I think that would be a nice quality of life change.
Especially if the raid or if these explorable dungeons are on the same accessible via the map where you log into to go to the raid, kind of like what people do. Yeah, like we did with Vault of Glass. Oftentimes, you'd go log in at Vault of Glass, then you got six people together, and you're all zooming around. Mm-hmm. You know, the explorer.
Yeah, you just go to the right area. And you do something else with six people, because being able to explore with up to six, I think, is going to be really fun as well. So opening up that would be pretty awesome. We didn't cover big PvP changes. That threes and sixes are gone. Fours is the new PvP meta.
So, fours is awesome.
Yeah, and they noticed that when they did custom matches, they noticed that some of the tournaments started going towards fours. And the feedback was very positive of it. Halo was all fours too, and was really big in esports. So I think that's going to be it. Was both of those combined together are big drivers on why we have fours. And I really hope we do fours and eights, because I love the big team battle in Halo. Give me big maps and give me eights, baby. Brandon?
Speaking of the PvP, somebody that was there that I was kind of spying on and watching what he's been saying about it, he said that the PvP felt very much like Halo Reach gameplay, but with Destiny mechanics.
Okay.
That makes me really, 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 really happy.
One of the quality of life things that came up that I thought was really good, but that at the same time I want to get your reaction to, is the fact that
I'll beat my kids.
You don't have to go into orbit anymore in order to travel from location to location, which sounds fantastic, right? Except when is the most time that you spend bullshitting with your clanmates when you're trying to gather other people is when you're sitting in orbit.
Mm-hmm.
So if
you'll have social media or not social media.
I know you'll have all the social stuff, but the part where bonds have been made are because you had to spend 10 minutes in orbit while you're waiting for somebody else and you got to BS while that was happening. If you're just able to jump from one place to one place without even having to do that anymore, I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying, will that affect some of the bonds that were brought together in some of the clans based upon the fact that you did have to spend all that extra time just hanging out for a few minutes because that's all there was to do?
Now the bonds are going to be soccer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So if you've ever raided or played any mission with Captain Caveman, you will know that this is the best thing in the world for your raid team, that they're doing away with the orbit time. Because we would sit there in orbit for an hour and a half. Caveman, I love you. I'm sorry. We would sit there in orbit for an hour waiting for him to make sure his inventory is ready. Not just his inventory on his person, the inventory in his vault, which he isn't using, hasn't used in months, and then make sure his postmaster
called it. We called it waiting for Caveman to get dressed. It's and it, we basically say, everybody ready? And it's like, we probably still have to wait for Caveman to get dressed. And you hear him like, yeah, I'm still getting ready. Dang it.
We literally have to tell Caveman to get on an hour before the rest of us for a raid time, just so he can get ready.
We drop in, start our supers up, shoot a couple of things, get our supers charged, wait for him, go in there. But what Chris was saying, yeah, a lot of orbit time is communication time. You'll still have that in between PvP matches. It's going to be much, much shorter in between worlds. But I do like that when you are with your three-man fire team and want to just bounce between stuff, you will be able to do that. But I probably will still be orbit too. You probably could still select go to orbit as you're waiting on a person's space if you're waiting for another person. But if your fire team's pre-made and you got your three, let's go to the next spot, and you don't have to do jump. Just hit it, and then your ship goes there, and voila. And
you guys were talking about things that affect PvP. Yeah,
space battles.
They haven't talked about that at all, which I think is interesting. One of the things that I think that we talked about with PvP, and there's big changes, no intellect, no discipline, and no strength. The cooldowns are now just universal, which I think is going to affect how people play the game, because now they don't have to set certain gear slots and they can kind of play with whatever it is they liked, which I think would be awesome if this wasn't an MMO, but like the whole discipline and like all of that is part of an MMO. So it's like they're still dipping one toe in the water and one toe out of the water on this.
I think it's because they're going to be gearing up more towards MLG. And that's why the 4v4 as well, is because that's generally the accepted format for MLG.
And there are two rumors that we didn't hear anything about. We didn't hear anything about increased clan size, and we didn't hear anything about pets, which I know, Damien, that's something you wanted. And there was a blog post a while back in February or March from gamer tag that was a known leaker.
Disgruntled.
Everything he said was correct so far. The only thing that wasn't talked about was pets, that we would each warlock, titan, and hunter would get an in-game pet, and we didn't see that in this one. So curious if they cut that or if it's going to be a bigger reveal in the beta.
Hopefully they didn't, because that was something that they originally wanted to give us, hence why all the artwork had variations of these cats with the big ears and other type of animals that were with them. That was supposed to be something that would help out the classes.
The other thing that we didn't talk about was the fact that on console, this thing is going to be locked at 30 frames from everything that we've heard, and it's going to be at 60/uncapped on PC. So that's going to be a big deal. Also, in order to gain some cred, they could have easily went to Steam, or they could have went with their own and they decided that they weren't going to do that, and they're going to go with Battle.net, which they're going to lay Thor's hammer down with Battle.net. If anybody who's played Overwatch knows that if you're cheating and you're playing in this, shit gets real, real fast. Like, you will be hit hard. And so if this is going to be MLG, and we were talking about mainstream streamers, or, you know, being on Destiny, they're going to be playing on PC because A, it's easier to stream, B, it's easier to cut out cheaters. And that's what they're all about. So to have Battle.net, and the other part about this, and I was looking at Patrick Klepek, because he's always an inside guy when it comes to this kind of stuff. And he talked about the fact that Steam takes a 30% cut. And so in order to cut that out, if you go with Battle.net, not only are you able to lay the hammer, but you don't have to take a cut off of Destiny, off of Activision, because Activision already owns Battle.net. So this is pure profit for these guys. So for the PC players, if you're looking for it on the 8th, not going to happen. It's going to be later. But it's going to be later because would you rather have it quicker or would you rather have it done right? And so that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to opt to get it done right. So it may take a little bit longer. And for those people who are PS4 owners and are streaming right now, I have a feeling that this is all going to move towards PC as soon as the PC becomes available. And so instead of running dual consoles with your Xbox and your PS4, you're going to be running your PS4 and your PC, which is why cross-platform play, which they have left open, they said they are still open to that, is a huge effing deal. Because if they can make this cross-platform, the people who are playing on PS4 and then are able to convert their player over to PC once that opens up is a big deal for streamers.
Or if you could bring over your Xbox,
yep,
which would be allow people to play with the Sony side, because I'll be playing PC and Xbox.
The problem is when it runs at 60 frames and yours runs at 30 frames, who has a better advantage in the game? I don't know if it makes a difference or not, but you know that it's going to be a fanboy issue if one runs at 60 and one runs at 30. They're going to bitch just because of the frame rate. So I don't know if they'll do that so much as I'm just hoping that they'll just be able to convert. They might just do a mea culpa and say, you know, we're not going to be able to have crossplay when it comes to playing console to PC, but you can transfer your character, which is like, I mean, that's all you can ask from us. And you might be able to catch Destiny on PC for X amount if you've already paid for it on PS4. Like, you could pay $35 instead of the full $60. So if they do it that way, done and done, and you'll get all of those streamers to transfer over, because that's what they're trying to go, you know, that's what they want. Yeah.
Because I'd like to be able to jump back and forth, because, you know, having a laptop, and if you're traveling or anything like that, and you want to play your game, you know, you get on there, you'll be able, especially if you're able to transfer back and forth the character stuff, that'd be awesome.
And there are expansion packs, so we know that there are going to be expansion packs for this. Mm-hmm. My curiosity is how long this game's going to last. You know how quickly we blew out DLCs for Destiny. So is this expected to be lasting 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, a couple months? Cajun?
Yeah, they've come out and said that this was in Activision's internal release, but one of their investor releases.
Investor releases.
That they're set up to keep up with their player base's desire. So their cadence is going to be what their player base wants. And so I think that's why we had to deal with such a big lull leading up to where we're at now, leading up to Rise of Iron and after Rise of Iron, is because they're putting all their focus into loading the wagons for DLC. And then once Destiny 2 launches, a lot of the Destiny 2 team is going to move in that as well. So I would be highly surprised if we didn't get DLC at quarter intervals, like every 3 months.
Like new Diablo? Every 3 months. Like almost like a Diablo?
More like World of Warcraft. Okay. So World of Warcraft, if you go into the game of World of Warcraft, there's a calendar of events. So you know that during this time of the month, you're going to have this type of PvP thing. You're going to have, there's the festival that's coming up. You're going to see the reason why we're going to be dealing with NPCs and things like that, because there's going to be NPCs that are going to come in. They're going to offer different challenges, different bosses, things like that. They're going to come in. That's where the open world aspect of the game is going to be coming in. They're bringing in a lot of to pull from that, because Blizzard also was another company that they said as soon as they went over to 2, they were pulling in a lot of stuff from Blizzard for saying, hey, how do we do this? How do we keep up with the content and keep our player base engaged? And this is where they're kind of working with Fouts.
The reason they're able to keep up with it is because they postponed this game a year.
That
we were supposed to have Destiny 2 last year. So, I mean, they've had this whole year to keep up and keep ahead to try and stay ahead for all the DLC that they have and that they're going to be releasing. And not only just the DLC, there's going to be in-game special events and things, you know, kind of like what we have with SRL and year one, or not year one, but year two and Destiny 1. But there's going to be more often that we're going to get those type of events that are supposedly going to be substantial
they
events,
want,
not just,
they want,
oh, go drive your Sparrow
around. They want people, they want clans to be able to rally. That's that. This game is really big. This one's title is going to be, they knew that clans were a big deal about Destiny, and that's what created the community. The stuff that they're going with the going to the clan base, everything, is that they're pushing for this to be able to promote the clan. So if you're a clan out there that's creating content, things like that, or that's out there sherpering, they're going to be putting out events for said clans. Like there might be even like there's rumors of there even being the like being able to flip a switch and say you're in an open battle and being able to go and doing like a clan war in a in the open world.
Does this alienate individual players even more if they don't want to be part of a clan?
Meaning,
like, if you're a casual player and you don't really want to join a clan, you just want to buy this game, pick it up. You're a mom whose kid has been talking about Destiny because it's a new thing that's coming out in September, and all my buddies have it, and I want to play. I'm just talking about, does it alienate like certain people? Because if you're not part of a clan, it forces you to play it. The way the loop is set up for this game is to play every day, and if you miss like 2-3 weeks and or a month, and then you try to hop back in, and you're not, you know, Fouts who's at max level on every character, you know, it. I get it, but like I'm not. So then I don't. It almost like a month in, I'm like, I don't. I want to play other games, but now I don't know if I want to hop back in because I'm going to be so far behind. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, the
don't worry, I'll level
you
up.
The speed of leveling up has increased a lot since Destiny 1. We've seen improvements at every DLC, especially in Rise of Iron. They have a really good cadence now. And actually, I think Rise of Iron leveling is probably a little too fast to get to max than I would have liked. So I think with the leveling, I think they'll probably be at a good pace for that. In terms of alienating, I think that's a good word, maybe a tad stronger than what they're just going to be missing out on everything else in the game. They're going to be able to buy the game, spend their $60, and get $60 worth of experience. Play a little PvP, play the PvE campaign solo all the way through, and just like you would any other game, but they'd be missing out on all the other stuff. They'd be missing out on be able to complete a Nightfall if you're not soloing it, which soloing on Nightfall is pretty difficult. Easier now that you can respawn where you're at, but it's still really difficult. You're going to miss out on the raids. You're going to miss out on a lot of the other stuff. So you're not getting the full experience. So yes, that person is alienated, but I don't think Destiny is alienating them as much as they're alienating themselves. Destiny is making a game for groups to play. And if that person is adamantly opposed to it, they're going to spend $60 and get their $60 worth, where we're going to get more value for that investment because we're going to be playing this dang thing for months, playing all this content with all of our friends in different group scenarios and constantly be able to fill up our fire teams because of the choices we made to be able to play this game. So I think it's more of the other way around than Destiny alienating them. They made a choice. There's plenty of other first-person games for people who just want to play first-person.
I got two things for this. One, holy hell, what the hell am I going to do? Because like Red Dead Redemption comes out and there's so many other games. If, air quotes, Sea of Thieves comes out. So that you're going to be playing, you've got these games and then you've got Destiny. So, you know, who's your girlfriend and then who's the side chick that you're like, you know, talking to at the same time? Because that's what it's going to be. It's going to be really difficult because you're going to have to make some severe choices. To your point.
I work 3 days a week. So I got 4 days. I'm just gonna have to be like, okay, Destiny is for this amount of time, and then I'll be playing all though. Red Dead Redemption 2, Sea of Thieves. I have a feeling Sea of Thieves is gonna be my bae. Just saying.
But that was you anyway. You were always gonna be switching between games anyway, so it don't matter. Chris,
I don't know, man. But Destiny was the main one for me for a very long time.
My last point about Destiny and to Cajun's point. people who started Vanilla Destiny who were complaining about story and then said that they couldn't raid because they didn't know enough people also didn't know enough about the game almost 2 years ago. So now people going into it, A, Bungie is catering to the story part. They have that. Two, people are now conditioned to know what a raid team is, what a clan is, why we should be joining it. So when you come back, if you're the guy who was in it, you know, opening 3 months and then left, you're like, oh crap, okay, I know what a clan is. I have friends who joined one and I never got to be part of one, may now enter at the starting point of this because they feel like, okay, none of the guns carry over, none of the leveling carries over. I'm at an even playing field with everybody walking back in the door on this thing again. This is a great opportunity for me to join. This is perfect if you're a clan to start shouting from the mountaintops. Like, please join our clan. If you need members or want good people, because people are going to start to come to this game, I would assume in droves, that are not just the original Destiny fans who are trying to either get in or who were left out and now are trying to get in. And so you might be able to gain a lot of really good people that had no intention of joining this originally.
And there's also a way to do it in-game. Clans was 100% out of game in Destiny 1. The only way to find out clans existed was out of game. There was nothing in game to even acknowledge that clans existed besides the name you see under other people you happen to be playing with or against. And you, if you didn't go to search where they got that from, somebody could be completely in the dark if they didn't ever go to Bungie.net and just bought the game and started playing as is. So now it's in game and they can do LFG and find out what this stuff is, because so many times we found people in Uprising who were just, I need to search for a group of family-friendly people to play with, and they did their search, researched us, and found us that way. Now we could just have a banner and our thing right there, and people will have a centralized source to find us instead of having all these disparate websites and Google searches and like, how do I find people playing Destiny? And getting into a Reddit forum and getting into a forum, oh, you don't want to have to deal with that vitriol just to find someplace fun to play. Having that in-game and being able to use those tools to find cool people to play with who are similar to you, I think is, and what a lot of people I saw saying today in Uprising was that was their most exciting feature, was having that in-game.
So that, what does it awesome. Do to LFG sites? Just pretty much eliminates them. Like, who's gonna join an LFG site when you can do it right online? I mean, you can do it right in-game. You don't even have to worry about it anymore.
That's pretty much
very
it.
It's yeah. very true. It is. They're going to have to find another bread-and-butter game to go to.
Yep, and unless there's something in the clan thing that maybe makes it a little slower and LFG faster, if there's one little tweak, it will still get some utilization, but it's going to cut a majority of their utilization. Damien?
So, in closing of this topic, okay, we're all going to start everybody's going to start with a personal pick. What are you guys going to start out as in Destiny 2?
I don't even have to think twice. It's a warlock.
Okay. Fouts.
Hunter.
Derek.
Same way I did Destiny 1, Hunter.
I'll tell you what, so that we can also, for writing reasons, when this comes out, so we can all join in on an article, I'll run Titan. I started off as a warlock. I love warlocks.
I started as a warlock as well.
Dude, I love that jump. I love that jump.
I hate the float.
I converted over to a Titan. That's my main anyway. So I'll be running the Titan then. All
right. So in closing about the three guardians and the subclasses, we're losing three of them for sure. Like, completely gone.
At the start.
We're only going to have the three new ones. We're going to have Voidwalker. We're going to have Striker. And we're going to have Gunslinger. We're losing Ticklefingers. We're losing Hammers. And we're losing Voidbow. Also, with the Dawnblade, there is no self-res.
Oh, nice. Nice. Okay, so basically we're only
getting... Spear just almost came out of my nose.
Res Warlock.
But sorry. The thing is, with this stuff, what we've seen in the preview, we've seen Ikora Ray, we've seen the move. Oh, that was preview.
That was Voidwalker. Yeah.
Wait, no, you did. No, you saw.
No, we see her use Tickle Fingers, but that was before. Like, as a melee. That was in the other game trailer, like way back when.
That was before the thing.
That was before the Traveler.
This is coming from people that were there playing today.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Now, it was also said that they could open up the 7th, 8th, and 9th subclasses, which would be the three that we're losing, the Voidwalker, Ticklefingers, and I'm sorry, not Voidwalker, Nightstalker, the Hammers, and the Ticklefingers. But it's not going to come until
we're
probably
lose
a
that
DLC.
Bow? I mean, that bow is
we're losing
critical.
The bow. We're losing the bow. We're losing Sparky.
Somebody throw up the bow. Somebody hold it in place. Okay, next. And then, like, yeah, like.
That, also. That,
it'll come back
like
in a DLC
said,
and it'll be a big deal.
We're going
which
to get self-res. We're not getting self-res.
That's bullshit.
That was like my go-to.
Although it like when you have it, you have no other super, so it's like such a waste. Like yeah. You use it, but you don't have, you can't do damage, which really sucks.
You just sit there, so, you hold it. It's the crap moment, and so many times it saved the raid.
It's the
but you
it's
said
the
that
button.
The warlock is going to have a regen, like so it, that's almost like a self-heal.
It's going to have a self-heal,
but
it's not
is still like almost like a self-res because you're going to be able to hit the meter. At the oh shit moment, you're going to hit the meter and be able to, you know, fill it back up again and then be able to do whatever damage you're going to do. Then they have the kinetic and all that other crap so you can do the weaponry and blah, blah, blah. So I think there's been a lot of Destiny talk. I had like 50 other questions, but I'm going to hold them for now.
We have until September 8th, so we have lots more episodes to cover.
Save those for another date. One of the things that I just shouted at in chat was that Entertainment Weekly had just pulled the curtain off of the NDA that they had on people who saw the Wonder Woman movie early, and stuff just got real because people were scared, nervous. I know I was. However, this like any conversation about this was it's a blast. It's so good. And by a great majority, it's the best to date DC Extended Universe. Also, widespread praise for Wonder Woman herself, as Godot was described as absolutely phenomenal and a legit movie star. She's gonna blow up. And to be a strong female lead in any freaking movie, specifically Wonder Woman, who's so iconic, we desperately, desperately, as anybody who loves DC, needed this movie to be good. Because it is the reason why people are going to go see Justice League. If this thing sucked, League was going to get shit panned immediately. Thank God. Like, and what it says to me is, please, somebody do something else with Superman, or maybe his character is not good enough and we need to be moving on. And the other thing is, can somebody please just take on the directorial of The Flash? Because everybody is dropping this thing like a hot potato currently.
I was excited if Sam Raimi took it, but then when he left, I was like,
oh,
no.
He never took it. He was just listed as we would like him.
What? Oh,
and
yeah.
He immediately was like, no thanks, I'm all set. Like, I'm good. Don't need to be a part of this. Can I just get my name as far away from DC Universe as possible?
But do you think some of these directors are going to second guess themselves now that they're hearing that Wonder Woman is getting praise? Do you think that some of them are going to think, oh, well, maybe now I should have taken that DC position?
No, because look at Matthew Vaughn, look at Josh Whedon, look at the ones who've taken the jobs before this. I think Flash itself is too much of a hot mess in its current state. We have no clue what the script is. It already did a whole full rewrite. It's gone through a couple of directors. There's probably other things going on that makes this specifically a hot mess. And we know the DC Universe before Wonder Woman has a lot of hot mess in it as well. So what we're going to get after it, where's the first good DC movie? And I wasn't picturing it until after Justice League, one of those. But if the current results, like there's initial results that seem bad for Wonder Woman, but if the current critical praise holds true, and this is the first one that's the first good movie in this DC Extended Universe, then I think that's the train that they're going to be riding a little bit more on, because they've been needing that. They've been just getting lambasted everywhere but the box office. People still go see their stuff. They've been hit everywhere else but the box office.
I honestly didn't expect anything good to come from DC until at the very soonest possibly Aquaman. And even then I was questioning it just because of where they have to go for that. Like I did not think Wonder Woman was going
to
do
this. Might be, and what I think it is being compared to is their version of Captain America. Like, so Captain America was praised critically, but at the box office wasn't a huge deal. But because of the critical success and then the fact that there was a second Iron Man and then it just kind of snowballed into the MCU, it got Winter Soldier. So this could be easily a movie that is critically praised, somewhat okay at the box office, but not enough to make a huge success, but enough that it'll earn itself a second film. And so I'm hoping that that's the case. I'm just hoping it's good overall. I don't really give a shit. Like, I just want to be able to go to see Wonder Woman and be excited about going to see Wonder Woman. And the fact that there's a strong female character for me personally, like, I just don't think that there's enough for a lot of younger girls. And so this makes me excited because it might cause a mom to take her daughter or a dad to take his daughter to go see this. And anything we can do in order to perpetuate that, I think is
a Wonder Woman 2 is already confirmed, but it will not come until That's after awesome. Batgirl.
Well, it's also like Wonder Woman was the first year that I was up here with my stepdaughter. That was her costume. She went as Wonder Woman. So I'm totally excited to bring her to it.
Yeah, to Chris's point, comparing it to Captain America, Wonder Woman does have a lot of parallels. It's both superheroes who come from nowhere into a world war. They have super strength and speed. They have the shield. They have a paramour who's already involved in the war. They're basically looks like facing some sort of German chemically altered something or other as a main villain and some sort of Nazi elements in Wonder Woman, and when it was clearly German influenced stuff in Captain America. So they have a lot of parallels, and I could definitely have seen them say, just do that with this movie in that sense. And so really, I want this to be good, and that's good stuff to hear.
It's okay for it not to have a main villain for the first one. But for the second one, who would be a main villain for Wonder Woman? Like somebody that people would recognize. Because that you need one of those. You need to have somebody who is the opposite of your protagonist in order for you to feel for the protagonist. And so, like Wonder Woman...
First off, I would say Black Adam, but because he's normally typically a really evil dude. However, the way that they sound like they're going with him is that he's going to be an anti-hero.
Yeah, and I don't know Wonder Woman's rose gallery enough to say what she's going to be like. I have no clue what her rose gallery is. So
neither do I. That's why I was curious. I was just hoping that there was somebody that would stand out and go, "Oh yeah, I know who that is."
We have Ares, Giganta, Angleman, Cheetah, Blue Snowman, Dr. Psycho, Dr. Poison, Dr. Cyber, Dr. Duke of Deception, and a bunch of other ones. But for this one, it's going to be Dr. Poison.
But Damian, to your point, what if they brought The Rock in at some point as a cameo at the tail end of something?
It would be cool. It'd be nice to see him because the other thing, it's a good play. Because how hot is The Rock right now with his films and everything? He's like the movie star.
Yeah, he'll be good, but I don't think they need to make good movies instead of bringing in movie stars. They need to make something good that people are going to see. A movie star or a charismatic performance is not going to carry the movie. I mean, Ben Affleck was freaking great as Batman. He's not as well loved as Dwayne Johnson is by any way, shape, or form, but he was great in that role. There was a lot of solid roles. Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot was great in her role too, and Batman and Superman was still a hot mess. So they need good script writing and good direction to take this stuff forward. But you can take a minor rogue and make it into a great movie. Or I don't know if it's going to be a great movie, but it looks it so far. Spider-Man Homecoming uses Vulture as their main villain, and that's like a low-tier villain for Spider-Man in his rose gallery.
Listen, when I'm watching TV right now, like, honestly, I consider Netflix almost like ABC, NBC, or CBS at this point. Like, when I'm looking for something to watch on television, and we just talked about Master of None, and then we talked about... like five other shows over the last 5 weeks that I've been watching on Netflix. And Netflix has stated that they're going to be coming out with a series which blew like the entire Twitterverse on fire, which is The Witcher. And coming off of talking about Castlevania already coming out. And then the fact that, remember last year when they had the discussions about Legend of Zelda and they were going to have Zelda coming out as a series on Netflix, they're trying to touch bases on an awful lot of places. What I found interesting about The Witcher was the fact that the novelist who came out with it, which is Sapkowski, sold away all of his rights to the video game series. He handed it over to CD Projekt and was like, you know what? Here you go. I'm going to sell this for X amount of dollars on a 10-book series that I've had over a 30-year career, and I really don't feel like you're going to make a ton of money off this. And then it blew up, and he receives nothing, not a dime. So he's a bitter, bitter man over the Witcher series. However, he does own the novel rights, which is what Netflix bought. And so what this is going to be is going to be talking about the novelization of The Witcher, which a lot of it is prior to Geralt losing his memory, which happens in 2. And so you're going to get a lot of these stories. The thing that I'm kind of nervous about, and I'm just slightly nervous about, is Geralt as a character is a monster hunter. And so what I want to see on Netflix is like a Monster Hunter series. One monster, he takes it out. One monster, he takes it out. One monster, he takes it out. If this becomes like a drama or becomes like this really long to do, I feel like it might lose a little bit of its mystique. And the other thing is for me personally, this cannot be, I don't want to see it as Grim. As a cartoon. This needs to be a live action. They talked about the CG. So they're going to be putting down a ton of money on this thing. And then who are they going to get to play Geralt, which is the other big thing, because Mads Mikkelsen is like the person everybody's talking about. That dude is not doing a Netflix series. I'm telling you that right now.
I don't know. I mean, Brad Pitt and Will Smith are doing Netflix movies right now. And then Netflix has one of the biggest production budgets in TV right now, and they're throwing it out. They have the investment capital. They're overspending their revenue this year in a growth plan. So if it's the time to go is in this period right now, in this 2-3 year period where Netflix is throwing money at anything and they don't care, they're not balancing their budget, this is the time to, if you want to make some bank, get that TV money, because that TV money is consistent over many episodes. And with a franchise like this, oh yeah, you get you some Mads Mikkelsen in there.
But why not mention if it's going to be a cartoon or anime or whatever, or if it's live action? Why not say that right up front?
It's still in early development, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but still, at the pitch meeting should have at least cleared that up. But at the pitch meeting, it could have just been, look how popular this is and look how great the story is. Because the story in Witcher is great. My only concern is how it would translate to the screen. Because the way the story plays in the Witcher right now is very a choose your own adventure type thing. And I like the way Chris brought it up, because I didn't give much thought to how it would actually play, but I like the Monster Hunter theme. I like the you're roaming the lands hunting monsters with an overarching plot of the, which all the overarching plots in The Witcher are kings and big Game of Thrones style family rivalries, trying to wrestle power in the land. That's the big overarching stuff that he's dealing with. And then while he's doing that, hunting monsters along the way and taking these things. So I think a series like that could be entertaining, because even though I said I don't like serialized stuff, I like me some Witcher and I like him killing some stuff with his magic. So I would like to see that. But there is a lot of high-end, high-def monsters in there that you need to spend a pretty dime on to get them done right. So if they do live action, it's going to be expensive, but I think it would be better.
If they do live action, aren't they looking at the studio that did, or the visual effects company for Game of Thrones?
They're looking. It's kind of high end. Here's the thing that I don't think that they'll be able to touch on, which, because Netflix doesn't touch in this area, and I think it would be more HBO. What about his loin sword that needs to come out about 90% of this episode, because all of the sex scenes that are involved in The Witcher? How are they going to handle that? Because it's not just a minor aspect. Now, it might be a minor aspect in the books, but in the game, it is very much so a major plot point. So,
point of Faust, because he's going to say exactly what I'm going to say.
Netflix doesn't give a shit. I mean,
exactly.
Have you seen Sense 8?
No.
Okay. Sense Sense8, if you haven't seen it, I actually really like it. I actually watched both first and second season now. I'm all the way caught up. It takes place over 8 individuals who are psychically connected, and they live all over the world. If one person's doing it with another person, one of the other 8 people senses it, and they end up starting doing something with them, and then all of a sudden, in their mind, they're all having an 8-way orgy. And this is a Netflix original series. There's going to be no problem with The Witcher's loin sword. None.
Yeah, and you were just talking about the Netflix series a couple weeks ago about the one with the girl who did the black podcast at college that had a sex scene every episode. Yeah so they have no issue going.
None at all.
Going R.
Fouts, we've just renamed this episode #. So.
Yes.
Hot dog, no hot dog, loin sword.
Hot dog or loin sword.
But the fact that The Witcher's coming has me excited. Another show that has me excited, and I know, Damien, you just saw the trailer for this, Star Trek Discovery, has me really excited, specifically for a character that we know from The Walking Dead.
Yeah, Sinequa Martin Green is going to be the lead in this.
And she is a beast. Like, when I saw her on screen, I'm like, oh, there's Sasha. So it got me excited, and this is the reason why she left The Walking Dead. She left The Walking Dead, and her character was, you know, killed off for other reasons, I assume, aside from this. But she took this.
Oh no, for this, like she probably took this job and it's like, yeah, kill me off.
She took this role, and if you can see the fact that she's a human slash Klingon in this,
not Klingon
or not Klingon. Pardon me, Vulcan. Pardon me, Vulcan.
Human raised by Vulcans. It seems she doesn't have the ears. Yeah.
But they're going against Klingons, which I thought was really cool. And it reminds me of The Wrath of Khan. Like, some of those characters look really close to those characters, like the models for that.
But they kept the Klingon look from the new movie series, which is more animalistic.
Yeah. And the special effects and the sets and the budget, this looks like a... This looks like the Star Trek movie productions. This looks like the J.J. Abrams reboots. Any of those movies, if you'd have shown me this trailer and said, this is the new Star Trek movie, this is the fourth one in the J.J. Abrams universe, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'd buy it. It looks that good. So kudos to CBS dropping the cash and making this look as great as it does, because everything looks fantastic.
It really does. It looks like her character is kind of in the midst of a battle, and obviously they show the Klingons, and it's going to be... That's a great first season. Like, the fact that they brought that forefront, I think, is like, okay, let's bring the things that everybody knows about Star Trek, and let's bring them up right away. And it's been a while since there's been a consistent Star Trek series, so I think this is a good idea to bring it back around this time again, especially with the new Star Trek movies.
Okay, and quickly on Star Trek, like, in this same couple of days, we had Star Trek Discovery, the big real Star Trek show, and then we had the Star Trek satire, The Orville, which is coming to Fox. It dropped its trailer, and this Star Trek satire is starring Seth MacFarlane from Family Guy fame, and the pilot episode is directed by Jon Favreau. And it's going to be a satire, very Galaxy Quest style, but not them playing fake roles, them playing real roles, and them spoofing and satiring the whole Star Trek universe. So these will be airing sometime in 2017. And if they're airing side by side, that would be really surprising, because you'd be basically be dropping... one, the serious one, and then you can watch the next one. It's basically, they're going to be riding right on the coattails of the revitalized Star Trek audience that's going to be flocking to Discovery, and they're just going to be catching their other show that's going to be making fun of it and laughing at the same time, too. So I think it's going to be fun. Damien, you have one of the ones you want to go on to next, my man?
Yeah, Netflix is getting... Now, this is a huge, huge deal for me, because I grew up with the Jim Henson films. They are getting a prequel to The Dark Crystal. It is going to be a 10-parter, and like they're right now the teaser for it is they're showing Jim Henson talking about how this was how it was like his favorite thing that he created, and like it just brings back the feels. Like I grew up, I can't tell you how I wore out 3 VHS tapes of The Dark Crystal, and then actually like and like it's my all time like favorite Jim Henson film. Probably it's in my top 3 favorite films of all time, just because of the story alone that goes into it. I'm hoping that they, I mean, it's the Jim Henson Studio that's doing it, and I'm hoping that they really are able to do something pretty crazy with this prequel.
Yeah, because for me, I'm hyped about a lot of stuff today. There's so many things. We have more stuff we're going to be covering. I am right on board with you, Damien. Like when I saw this, when I originally saw the trailer does not, it's a teaser trailer, does not explicitly say this is a prequel. It looks like it's just an homage or even could be a documentary on the Dark Crystal. But the definition of the video was so crisp and the characters were so crisp and a couple of things looked new. I was like, it made me like reach out and I started looking up articles because I saw the trailer first. And I was like, oh crap, oh, this is them setting up, this is their behind the scenes of the production studio talking about this prequel one. And oh yeah. My God.
That's what I did too. When I first saw it, I thought, oh, is this the documentary? Because there is a documentary on The Dark Crystal. And that's what these scenes were taken from was from the documentary. This documentary used to travel with the Jim Henson, it actually still travels. They would have a traveling exhibit that would go around to like the science centers and things like that of the Jim Henson's films, and The Dark Crystal, this documentary, travels with it. And those scenes that you see in that are from that documentary. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh, I remember seeing this at the OMSI, you know, the science center. And then realized, I'm like, wait a second, Resistance. And I did the same thing. I looked it up and I'm like, oh my God, they're doing a prequel. This is going to show when they split and everything. This is, oh my God, it's just
going to
be awesome.
Yeah, and now I don't know if it's going to show the split or if it's going to show like a long lead up to that. It's going to show the world into it, and they can even go further back because it's all Muppets, so you can really go even further back at that point. But yeah, the title of the show, I think we got so excited we missed it. We just said Dark Crystal Prequel. The title of the show is going to be Dark Crystal Age of Resistance, and it's going to be a 10-episode series produced by Jim Henson Company.
So I assume these are hour-long episodes? Huh? Like, yeah, hour-long episodes. This totally brings me back to my childhood, like when Jim Henson was at its peak, like Fraggle Rock, like, you know, this. So to have the Dark Crystal, this is going to touch with a lot of Netflix 30, late 30, 40-somethings. Do you know what I mean? Because it's going to be like, oh, yeah, I remember when this was popular. I remember when this was.
Yeah.
And so
Trial by Stone. Yep. I mean, come on now. Trial by Stone. I can't tell you how many times in video games when my brother and I are playing a game together, we'll reference it. We'll start shouting Trial by Stone when we have a disagreement.
And so there might be younger people that know about this, but you're hitting people in the fields that live this. So I think this is going to touch a different audience, which is for me personally is like, oh yeah, you're hitting me right when I was a kid. This is perfect. And yeah, again, this is like Netflix just hitting on, like, literally, it's like everything they touch right now. It's unreal how they're able to hit a pulse and go, this looks good. And people are passing. By the way, people are passing on the shit that they're taking because there are tons of studios that are like, nope, 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 this isn't going to work. No, I don't think so. And Netflix is like, yep, nope, we're going to throw money at it. And if you notice, Netflix, the stuff that they're putting money on is hitting second and third seasons. And it's only because people are watching it. It's not because they're just randomly picking second seasons and third seasons of things. Things that they're producing are creating second and third seasons of things, which means that to Cajun's point, they're throwing money early, but in the back end, they're making a ton of money because they don't have to add extra money onto these things.
Okay, exactly. I'm super hyped for this. We don't have any word on when this is coming out. This is just the first announcement that it is coming. So when we do hear more about it, we're definitely going to be on it because it's hit me. This was one of the first things that scared me as a kid. Like, I avoided scary movies. This is one of the first movies that I liked, but then scared me. The skeptics! And, oh, and the lady with the eye on the forehead and stuff like that, too.
My Freddy Krueger. Yeah. Side note.
love so much of this.
So, Cajun, you want to talk a little bit about Orville?
Kind of already hit it, but I will go back to one thing that we skipped over, because we've been covering a lot of shows, and we talked about the greatness of Netflix, Glow. If anybody remembers from the 80s, there was 80s, 90s, there was the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
And Netflix is producing a show that's a dramatization of the rise of Glow. And it's a look at the personal and professional lives of a group of women who perform this in Los Angeles. And it's coming soon. Like, first episode, like, the whole series is dropping June 23rd. So it's a little over a month away. And it actually looks really good. I was surprised when I saw that. I was like, I don't know, when I just saw the tagline, but the trailer looked good.
If you're looking for shows out right now, Game of Thrones is going to be hitting real soon. This is going to be hitting real soon. There's a ton of stuff that we're going to be covering. I have a feeling that all of us are going to at least be touching base with it, with these shows. So these are conversations that we're going to be having. You're going to find that, again, we've been talking about this, Netflix is a mainstay for us. Like, I think that we're going to be touching base on a lot of Netflix shows, even stuff that I'm not sure about. I'm like, well, Netflix produced it, so at least I'll give it a look, which is what happened with Master of None. And like, it was like, oh wow, this is really good. So I think we're going to be hitting things. Another thing I want to talk about, which I thought was hysterical, was that Pirates of the Caribbean 5 was being held hostage by hackers. Somewhere in the world, somebody was making a really big meme about pirates because they were pirating the Pirates of the Caribbean, which I thought was really funny.
Bing.
However, Disney was like, you know what? Two middle fingers. There's plenty of people that hack stuff anyway, so no worries. Go ahead and hack away for, it was like around $80,000 they were looking for, American money. It was like 61.
Really? That's it?
And whatever. Yeah, that was it. Really funny, right? And they were going to leak it piece by piece by piece by piece. And Disney was like, they treated it just like hostage situation. We're like Americans. We don't give into hostage situations. And so they just let it go. And now we're closing in on the 26th and nothing released. Cause they were like, well, they were like, well, 20% of the people watch this stuff illegally anyway. So whatever, go ahead and release it. We don't care. The people who really want to watch it in theaters are going to watch it in theaters, regardless of whether you release it or not. And they just let it go, which sends a big.
You're not watching Pirates of the Caribbean for the story?
No. But listen, if you're a big company like that, and now you're a hacker, you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm not going to make anything. So like, what am I doing? I mean, I guess I'm going to release it so that random people can watch it and my name is known for like less than half a day. But other than that, like, ransom is not okay. And this was backed by throughout the movie industry. It was like, you know, two middle fingers. Go ahead and steal it. Doesn't really matter to us.
Yeah. Now, and we don't even know, like, if they're going to be getting, like, the full quality.
No,
right?
No.
Are they getting the full 1080p?
This one that they hacked, it was full DVD screener quality. Yes. Really? Like, oh, wow. It was the actual movie, like, hey, let's just go out to the store and buy this on Blu-ray and watch it. Same quality.
Oh, wow.
I don't want to say anything too negative, especially about Plex servers, but if you're a hacker, apparently these companies aren't going to give in. And even if they do, they don't really care whatever it is you're selling, because they feel like they can make enough money based on the less than, you know, 20 to 10% that you're going to be distributing it to. So
exactly. Cause there's a marketplace, which is the people that are going to buy the movie, go see the movie in theaters, spend money on it. And then, if your movie is of a certain quality, people will watch it for free. And you have a small section in the middle that will watch almost everything for free. And then there's the people who never watch anything for free and only pay. And then there's the people in the middle who jump on both sides. So if your movie is good enough quality, you're going to be pulling those people away from the negative stuff over there. And they know what they're going to get. They have all the marketing material known to man out there. Like, it's amazing to me how predictive some of these models are, where they can just put a pin right in there and then say, we're going to be making about this much. And so many times they're accurate. Like other times, like Ghost in the Shell being not as great as it was, Get Out being a lot greater, they're very wrong. But so many other times they're right on with it. Yeah.
So we saw a trailer for something that's coming out in Fox in 2017 that deals with X-Men called The Gifted. case yes. you want to dive in.
Yes. So this was, we previously reported this as, this was Bryan Singer's X-Men TV series. We talked about this in different capacities. I talked about it once when they actually were recording scenes of it here in Dallas. And it was actually listed in the newspaper as Heaven. But that was just a working title, same way Han Solo movies called Red Cup. It's just something to keep the sniff off of it. But this is the world where mutated humans are treated with distrust and fear, and a group of mutants battles to achieve peaceful coexistence. And so what we're dealing with here is, one thing I wasn't expecting was one of the, so basically we have two mutants who are ousted at, it looks like at a prom of some sort of school dance.
That's a brother and a sister, yeah. right?
It is. That's every, yeah, it
I
is.
I wasn't sure.
The dad is, the dad is an FBI agent or was a former whatever who was going against
that hunts them.
Exactly. The dad role going against mutants was something I was not expecting. So he basically, he knows now the tools that the other investigators are going to use to come after his kids.
Sure.
But he's a parent first, so he's going to be protecting his kids. And so he's going to be towing that line between protecting his kids and avoiding FBI agents, but also he could be towing that line. Because this one thing I didn't like about this trailer is it went about 30 seconds too long because they revealed a plot point of him ousting other mutants while he's protecting his kids to the FBI to keep them off their scent.
Also, so the canary that scene was a big plot in the bathroom point was a little too much too to me. Like the canary scene where the kid just like screeched out loud and then it had the ripple effect to everybody that was in there. I thought that gave away too much. Like they cut. And then they didn't show anything, and then they went back to that same scene, and they showed the kids screeching, and then it having ripple effects. I'm like, why do we show this? No. Like, this is
they gave away
been
too
for
much.
The show. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. There was a moment in that trailer about 30 seconds before the ending, where it's like that's where you end the trailer right here. It's like an emotional moment. You end right here, and some reason, 30 more seconds ended in there that had some spoiler plot elements, like you're saying, some spoiler CG elements that you didn't need. We were in before. You had us in with what you showed before. No need to show the other stuff.
On Geekologist Radio, we call that Spider-Manning it because that's what Spider-Man does. It just shows us way too many plot points.
Now, although I agree with that, one thing I would not be surprised about is if everything we've seen in the Spider-Man trailer that's so spoilery is the first two acts and there's a surprise third act.
Well, that would be helpful. I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I mean, but as it is, I've now learned the first hour and a half of the movie.
Right. In detail. In detail. Full detail.
Yeah. Like yeah, I can beat for beat what's going to happen in the first. You know,
we can sleep through the first half of the movie and not miss anything.
Yeah. Exactly. You know exactly what's going to happen. Yeah. And every funny dialogue bit, they've showed entire scenes of it and everything. Now, out of the blue, so Mr. Jordan Peele. Of Key and Peele fame, but even bigger Get Out fame.
Get Out.
Signed this big 5-picture deal or some major multi-million dollar deal with Universal where they get the first rights to his next 5 movies. Well, he comes out of the blue and does a TV deal with not only J.J. Abrams, but with Warner Brothers and HBO is going to be airing it of a TV series.
And JJ sought him out.
Yes.
Sought him
to
out.
Produce a TV series. And he said, what TV series would you want to produce? And he's like, I want to produce Lovecraft Country. I never heard of this book before. But once I heard the concept behind it, I was like, this is going to be so great. Because it's going to blend humor, realism, race, and horror, all in this one thing. So basically, this is a novel. It takes Jim Crow era African Americans on a cross country trip to help and find some family members. I think that's the main gist. The MacGuffin driving them across country, but it takes them through 1950s South. So they're going to be full. They're going to be dealing with all of the racial elements involved in it as well. But they're going to be dealing with it in an episode where they're going to be dealing with H.P. Lovecraft monsters. They're going to be dealing with stuff like the Blob and things like that. That like is going to be. This is the world for them. Now it's either going to be a surprise to them, or it's going to be the world is filled with these monsters, and they have to deal with this cross country along with all of the other racial elements that we know that Jordan Peele can deal with that keen eye, where it's he's going to toe that line where he's going to be making good social commentary, but making also like very entertaining shows. So
what I thought
this is going to be great.
I thought it was interesting because, first of all, like I just said, that H.A. like reached out to him first. And two, he's hot as like butter right now. Like he's buttery smooth. So people are really interested. The Get Out thing was a budget of $5 million that made over $125 million. So the guy makes money. And so in Hollywood.
Oh, $210 worldwide.
Oh, $210 worldwide. So this guy on a budget made over $205 million off of his movie, which to anybody is like that's straight cash. And for him specifically, in a horror film like this, he's not the writer of this. He was the writer in Get Out. He's not the writer in this. However, he's in that room all the time because he's the creative director. So meaning I know how I want horror to be, and this is my vision. And also, as an African American, I have an idea of how I want the characters portrayed. So whatever you're writing, anytime I want to change that, I will. And anytime I feel like it, I'll change it. And so that's how this is going to be played out. And so if you're HBO and you hear the word JJ and you hear the word him, that's straight money no matter how you play it out. And so they just threw cash and they were like, yep, we want this, whatever it is you're pitching. And it actually looks really good. The fact that it's going to be like a serial type with these – all we were talking about serials earlier, about the Monster Hunter thing. This is like a Monster Hunter version of – you know, that in this era on HBO, which is kind of a cool thing.
Right, because you had this overarching thing, this overarching cross-country trip or this overarching search that's going to do it. These look like things that are just getting in their way. So there's probably be constant chase in there, but how this plays out, like I actually really want to avoid the novel altogether because I really want to see how they play this out because this sounds entertaining in every way, shape, and form. There's not a beat in this. I'm like, man, they have fans coming every arena in this. But and JJ's probably one of the hottest executive producers and directors right now. And Jordan's one of the hottest producers and directors right now. And they're moving into HBO. It's done.
So we are 39 episodes in, and this is the first time I think we're gonna talk about this, but I don't think we're gonna do This Week in Geek. Like I think we're to a point where we have had too much information today. There's too much Destiny. There's too much movie news. There's too much TV news to extend this episode any farther than it is right now. Do we agree?
We've covered a lot, and we are long in the pants today, so we're probably gonna need to do our little sign off. And if you notice a voice missing, Mr. Damien already had to sign off because of how long we are, because he had some family stuff he had to attend to, and he probably thought he was going to be done by now, so he had to step away. You'll probably hear his actual post-recorded sign off here soon.
Or something that I edited in at the end that's going to sound absolutely hilarious.
Yes,
we love you, Damien, but it's your own fault because you left early.
I look forward to that.
So, Cajun, where can people find you?
Caucasian Saint on Twitter, Uprising Family Gaming Network, and all over the Geekologist Radio podcast, dropping them hot theories about Doctor Strange.
And more Destiny news as it gets closer and closer. And for you, Beef Outs?
You can find me perusing the Hot Dog Not Hot Dog app, and you can find me on Twitter at BeefOuts82.
And for Christopher, you can find me at Two Wolves, TWOWOLVZZ, on Keyed Up Media, on any of the normal social media you can find me at. For Geekologist Radio and for Ninja Pancake, we are out.
Hello, my name is Elda May. I just got off of the big Woody bus up here in Washington State. I ran into this Mr. Thomas Middledick. He was on that Woody bus just stripping for pennies. He said that you could find him on Twitter at Mr. Damien Nash. And oh, boy, he wasn't packing very much.